If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome back to another special edition of Why Blank Lost, as we continue our series of Why Blank One podcasts in parallel with the RHAP Survivor season rankings. I'm David Bloomberg, and unlike Monica, I'm not just doing this podcast for David, but for everybody. I'm joined, of course, by someone whose own daughter would never vote her off, Jessica Lewis.
Oh, hey. Sorry, I was thinking about just sitting this one out today. I mean, I don't know. I have some chicken wings. I don't really need to be here, right? I'm going to do well anyway. It doesn't really matter if I compete or join you today, right?
Yeah. Now, did you bring enough of those for everyone?
Well, no, because no one else is with me, unfortunately.
Oh, so you're just secretly eating all the food is what you're saying.
I am. But let me tell you, that was one of the best moments ever when Tyson was just like thoroughly enjoying his food during that immunity challenge and just making such a display of it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So I have to give him kudos for his performance, because if anybody was acting like, I don't care what any of you think, this is all about me right now, that was Tyson's moment, and it made me laugh so loud because it was so representative of what we saw, I think, throughout most of his game.
Yes, yes. And yeah, I mean, it's funny because I didn't actually introduce why it is we're here, who it is we're here for. So I should say this week, the reason we're here is to say, F you, Brad Culpepper.
That's right.
Oh, wait, no. Sorry, that's not why we're here. We're actually here to discuss why Tyson won Survivor Blood versus Water.
Do we have like the ability to blur? Because I could go like this or something.
Well, I was wondering about that. And that's why I pointed instead. And, you know, just,
it was very aggressive. Oh, my goodness.
It was. And she did not say F.
No. I was considering saying that to you, but I'm like, I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Start swearing on the podcast.
I do have the ability to remove you from the video.
You do, and I didn't know if you would like my chicken eating either, so I was glad that was
just
okay.
Jealous that I didn't have any.
I have some more, but I want to eat the rest of it.
Well, as we've mentioned previously, we are focusing on two groups of winners for these podcasts, those who make us wonder how they won and those who did such a good job that we think it's worth discussing them. While it might not have been as obvious in his first two times playing, this time made it clear that Tyson is definitely in that second group.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And to figure out why Tyson won, we will follow the same path as always, or at least that we always do during the normal Survivor seasons and during this series, which is to compare how he played to the rules I originally wrote way back after season one. And of course, we'll look a bit at Monica and Jervis as well to see how much their actions may have been involved in Tyson's win. Anyone who would like to refamiliarize yourself with the rules, you can check out the most recent version at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivor rules. Or you can get the shorter and much more colorful version of the rules in poster form at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2.
That's right.
And there's a poster behind you. There's a poster behind me.
And listen, to the two individuals who ordered recently and I failed to send you your poster within a couple of days. I know. I'm so sorry. I double checked eBay and I was like, oh, yep, everything's mailed out and sent. And then I went, oh, no, it wasn't. So Monday morning, promise you, they're on their way in case you're listening.
Look at that. They get a special live call out.
They do. I'm so sorry. I felt awful. So I don't know what happened. I lost my mind. Things were a little crazy and aggressive, but we'll get there.
Well, that's what happens when we have a short-staffed shipping department.
I know. It's just me. So yeah. I apologize to anyone. I try to stay on top of it as best as I can. And I screwed up on that one. So yeah, my apologies.
Well, You know, we'll be talking about someone screwing up on something and apologizing nearer to the end of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, also, in addition to the poster, we have another way you can get the rules so you can always have them with you. And that's in T-shirt form or, as I'm wearing today, in sweatshirt form.
That's right.
Now, you may be saying, David, there is a massive heat wave gripping most of the U.S. right now. Why are you wearing a sweatshirt? And the answer to that is, because I wanted to show it off.
He's dedicated.
Yes, I'm dedicated. And I'm in a basement with air conditioning. I'm not outside. Mm-hmm,
that's true.
So, but we do have it in regular T-shirts also for those of you who want to go outside. And you can go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click the merch link near the top. You can scroll through everything. You can just click on T-shirts. You can just click on sweatshirts, and there's more designs, as Jessica was just showing.
Ta-da!
In addition to that, there's the Y blank loss.
There's stuff on the back. I can't really turn around. Well, I'm going to knock everything over. But
funny thing is, I have it on a mug.
There you go.
So
Perfect.
You've got the checklist on a mug, the checklist on a shirt. You can get anything you want.
Anything and everything. It's amazing.
Yeah. So we're all geared out for this one.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to discussing the rules that are adorning us, there are always some things I want to mention about the season, as I do again here. For one thing, I unfortunately won't have much in the way of my special looks back at interviews and articles from the time because my website had ended a few seasons earlier with Survivor One World. But of course, Monica was on Survivor One World, and hers was one of the last interviews for Survivor that I ever did. So there'll be a bit of information from there that works its way into the podcast later.
Nice.
However, part of what she told me in that interview doesn't really apply to this season. I mean, maybe a little bit, but is interesting enough that I'm going to share it now. It's specifically her thoughts about Colton, who, of course, stabbed her in the back on One World, and then she had to deal with him showing up on this season.
Mm-hmm.
One reason she had been so hurt by his backstabbing was that she told me her relationship with Colton was even deeper than we saw. Quote, he was struggling and homesick on day three and said, I need a mom. You're my Monica. Which, by the way, can't you just hear Colton saying that in his whiny little voice? She then continued, I really was a rock out there and built him up and talked him into not leaving the game. And obviously that came back to haunt her. And then he left the game anyway.
His
appendicitis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I asked her what she thought of Colton after One World, or at least after she had been booted. And she said, I think Colton is small. I think he's small in his wisdom and small in his experience, and he is narrow-minded. I only hope that as a youngster at this age that he can learn from these things and grow. I then asked if she'd seen his sort of apology tweets in which he had basically said he was young and had to grow up on TV, etc. She said she hadn't, but added, I think it's hard in a day or two to change your opinions and very difficult for a zebra to change its stripes.
Mm.
It's an arduous process to change as much as he needs to at this point. It's kind of like she was predicting what would happen with Colton when he came back for this season.
Mm-hmm.
The zebra had not changed its stripes at all.
No, and I will say this too. Monica is such a strong individual, and for her to approach the question, your question, with the answer that she did, I think is very representative of how Monica is. She's giving you an answer and she's not necessarily putting him down, but she's explaining. Well, but she could have said a whole lot of really horrible things, right? And instead she tried to explain him in a way that wasn't necessarily putting him down, but explaining the interactions that she had with him and how he came across with her. And I think that that was something that was very impressive of Monica to even then in the second time with Colton still kind of take that mindset that like maybe he's changed and maybe he realized the way that he was, and it would be a great ending to his story if that's what happened. And so it's like she was trying to see the good in what was really bad. And unfortunately, what we saw was the same Colton that we got previously.
Yeah, I'd forgotten just how terrible his quit was. And I don't know, my mind must have blocked out just how whiny he had been.
Mm.
But Jeff Probst raked him over the coals, and it was so well deserved.
Yes, he really did. Well, and I mean, and he reminded him, we brought back a quitter. And there was some question as to whether or not he had quit the first time. And that solidified in everyone's mind that that's actually what had happened. And I'm shocked that they did bring him back, because there was such a question there as to whether or not it was a quit or was it medical, and nobody could really give a real clear answer. So the fact that they went out on a limb and said, oh, let's try this again, I was really surprised to see that. And clearly it didn't work out, but we did get Caleb from it. So that was wonderful.
Yes. And I think he must have pitched it as, you know, to the Survivor casting as a redemption story. And you know how they love their redemption stories.
They do. Absolutely.
So, moving on, one part of the season that I absolutely hated was them voting someone out before the game even began.
Oh, me too.
I mean, because of that twist, Candace and Rupert never had a chance to even play. And it was clear that somehow there was some lobbying going on behind the scenes, because a truly blind vote would end up in like a wide variety of names being shot all over the place. And that definitely did not happen. There were specific factions there.
Definitely.
And I mean, I know producers wanted Redemption Island to start up quickly, but it was just a crappy thing to do.
Yeah. And I really do think that what transpired from that was it set into motion a really bad group of things, that because they did it so soon and then Rupert switched with Laura, I think that that really had a huge shift on the game, because everyone on Rupert's tribe was very much looking forward to playing with Rupert. And that got taken away from them because Rupert decided to switch with Laura. And so I think it would have been a completely different game had we been able to see Candace and Rupert actually be part of their tribe, as opposed to being voted out immediately and Rupert switching and having all that happen. So it was just kind of like a ripple effect that I didn't love to see. And I feel bad too, because you really, you take away so much from someone like Candace, who's a great athlete, someone who's really into Survivor, understands the game, is a great player, and then you stick her on Redemption Island forever. You know what I mean? Like, that's just sad.
Just short of forever. Yeah. I did think it showed how Rupert and Laura's relationship was, that as soon as Jeff Probst said, you can switch, Rupert didn't even wait to hear the rest of the thing. He just started walking. But, you know, and I don't mean to be mean, Rupert isn't a great Survivor player. Laura, even less so. You know, it wasn't a whole lot there.
Yeah, well, I think people really wanted Rupert to feed them. There was that component where he was a great fisherman and he's great at camp life. And that becomes very significant, especially to people who have played the game before and understand the importance that that has. And then Laura comes into the tribe and she's not someone who's been exposed to these things. And so it's a much different atmosphere at that point. And so, yeah, it is, you know, Rupert has his flaws, but he also has some very great things about Rupert that make him a very celebrated Survivor player. And unfortunately, he was replaced with someone who nobody knew anything about, except that they wanted to vote her out first. So, who knows?
All right. Moving, as we continue skipping along, is just my random thoughts throughout the season here. Was the sumo immunity challenge one of the best challenges ever? We had Aris versus Vetus, with Vetus taking a cheap shot and Aris still winning. We had Laura versus Sierra. The only way I think that it could have been better is if Jervis had beaten Brad.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. I do really appreciate those types of one-on-one competitions, because it really does. It's kind of like a make or break moment for particular people, right? You can be the hero and you can be celebrated, or you can take a cheap shot and still get beat. And so I think it's very interesting to watch. I did really enjoy that. But I do think that that would have been interesting to see if Jervis beating Brad.
Yeah. Now, since I did just mention Laura versus Sierra, did you know that in this season, Sierra voted out her mother?
I know. I was so shocked. I had never heard that.
Like, I have never heard Jeff Probst even mention that.
I mean, it's not like it's been said repeatedly over and over again.
No,
every
never.
Possible turn, even going into season 40.
Never.
Ever.
No.
You want to know what's funny about that, too, I will say. So I was watching, you know, watching the show in my living room, and my husband was in the kitchen, and it was happening. You know, she was voting out her mom. Mm-hmm. And my husband is like, she voted out her mom? And I'm like, yeah, she did. He was like, Jessica, I'm being facetious. Like, everybody knows Sierra voted out her mother. It was pretty funny. Acted all shocked for a second.
Now, let's switch from one thing that everybody knows to one thing I'd actually forgotten. I mean, other people may have known this. Was you mentioned Caleb. When he did such a great job of turning the vote against Brad at tribal council.
Amazing. You
know, we always say that live tribal councils are truly rare instances, but this one definitely fit the bill. And I don't even think the term had been invented yet.
Oh, yeah, this is a live
tribal council.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, this also reminds me how sad it is that we lost Caleb at such a young age.
I know.
Almost exactly 7 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very sad. Believe. Yeah, I was filling my family in on that, too, when we were watching it, because they didn't know that part of it. And Caleb was such an incredible Survivor player. For someone who had never played before, to have his mind work the way that it did and to figure things out so quickly and to pull that off was truly impressive. So it's very sad that not only is he no longer with us, but we never got to see him again come out and play because he's no longer with us. So that was definitely... That was very sad.
Yeah. Yeah. So on that note, is there anything else about the season that you want to discuss before we get to the rules or any more chicken that you'd like to eat? Or...
I do have more and it's tempting me. I will say this, that for whatever reason, Redemption Island seemed to play out differently for me in this particular season than I feel like it has in other seasons where they've utilized it. And I'm not sure what it was, but I almost felt like better about it. And I'm curious, like I've been trying to kind of spin my wheels in my own brain to figure out why it felt better. But for some reason it did, even though I agree, it started too soon and they shouldn't have voted people off right away. But there was just some aspect of it that I appreciated. And I do think that it had a huge impact on the game, which is something we'll definitely talk about as we move forward. And there's a bug that is attacking me right now.
Well, it's drawn by your chicken.
It is. It wants my chicken.
You've heard of fruit flies. That's a chicken fly.
Didn't know there was a thing.
Yeah.
So I did feel better about Redemption Island for whatever reason and this season as opposed to other seasons.
Yeah. I mean, the first half of the season, the pre-merge, I enjoyed it because there was so much of the anti-Brad and the, you know, I mean, yeah, secrets were revealed that, you know, it was from a viewing standpoint, it was amusing. From a strategic standpoint, probably shouldn't have happened.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, everybody knows what I think of someone coming back into the game as late as, you know, the winner came back in.
Yes.
But it wasn't as big a deal in part because, well, Tina didn't win you know, the game. And she wasn't given an immunity idol when she came in, and she wasn't given secrets, and she wasn't kept with the jury. Sorry, going on a rant. it maybe, you know what? Maybe that's it, though. Maybe because we've seen how bad the twists can be with the Edge of Extinction, that we now look back at Redemption Island and go, oh, well, that wasn't so bad in retrospect.
Right. Like that makes more sense than what they've done now. So maybe that's what it was. I felt better about it.
You know, it's always a comparison.
Yes, for sure. Well, that's what we do, right?
Yes. So, all right. Well, then let's move ahead. By all accounts, Tyson came into the season being seen as a threat. Then the idea of him being a threat came up a number of times throughout the season. Yet nobody ever mounted a serious attempt to vote him out. How did he put himself into such a favorable position and do such a good job controlling the game? Now that we've done a blood versus water rewatch, it's time to take a new look at why Tyson won. The first and most important rule, of course, says to scheme and plot. As a smart three-time player, not to mention commentator about the game, Tyson certainly knew this and put it to good use from the early goings. He and Jervis bonded quickly over their loved ones being voted out first and second. And Tyson had a spot-on analysis of why Rachel's tribe voted her out as an attempt to get him to swap with her and therefore weaken his tribe. as he explained it precisely at the duel.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, it was the vote off of Rachel that caused Tyson's transformation from goofier and fun loving into playing with a purpose, because he wanted to make the vote against Rachel, and his choice to not replace her means something.
Mm-hmm.
A famous warrior once said, "If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine." Tyson essentially had the force ghost of Rachel with him at all times, not giving him pointers, but definitely giving him purpose and focus that he turned towards strategic gameplay.
Yeah. And I think that this made Blood versus Water such an interesting aspect, because you did have such reactions to various components of the, you know, people competing against their loved ones, essentially. You know, we saw what happened with Jervis when he was over celebrating and how they basically got back at him for over celebrating. And then the vote out with Rachel because they wanted to get to Tyson. And I think a lot of that probably started when we saw Rupert switch with his wife, Laura, where people started to realize that there are some serious heartstrings mm-hmm. attached here, and we can utilize that in our gameplay, and we can actually negatively affect them. Now, their thought was they were going to negatively affect Tyson, and instead they just amped him up and gave him all of the ammunition he needed to move forward. So I loved that part of it, because it did become part of the game, where it wasn't just about who do we want to vote out here because they're not working in our tribe, or they're not trying as hard, they're not doing as well in the challenges. No, it's who's their loved one on the other side, and how will that affect the game moving forward? And Tyson saw that very early on, and so did Jervis, and so did the people from the opposite tribe. So it was a very impressive rewatch, because that was something I just don't think I appreciated the first time I watched the season.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that when Jervis's niece was voted out, she already had a target on her.
Oh, you know, I'm sure
several
she
people
did.
Had voted for her in the pre-game vote. And she, of course, mouthed off to Culpepper, drawing attention to herself. But so I think they just wanted to blame Jervis, which, by the way, if you remember back to when we were watching, we did a rewatch for Why Richard Won, you know, back for the Wiggle Through Time series.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, by the way, people, that's not a season we're going to cover when it eventually gets here, because we just did one.
Mm-hmm.
But if you remember that, and I don't know if you do, Jervis was doing the same thing in the first episode of that season.
Yeah.
He was celebrating wild. It sticks in my head that he was celebrating wildly and being like, this is our island, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, he hadn't changed. He was just the same Jervis.
I know. And it was so fun to watch him, because I loved him in Borneo, and I've met him, which was an incredible experience to actually get to meet the guy. So he is just such an incredible personality. And I think the fact that he was celebrating, he wasn't even necessarily celebrating himself, which I think is hysterical, because he didn't really do that well in the challenge, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was really not doing well.
Yes, exactly.
But he was very happy for his tribe, and unfortunately, it was utilized as a reason to vote out his loved one. But I do think that that really is just Jervis. He wanted to go out there and have fun, and that's the type of person he is. So it was interesting to see the 13 years go by and still have him be that same Jervis. It was a great watch.
Yeah, yeah. Getting back to the rule, sorry, we sometimes go off on tangents, of course.
Jervis is worth a tangent.
Yes, it is. And of course, it brings us back to Jervis, because Jervis and Tyson, their bond strengthened as they became the Coconut Bandits. And
love that.
You know, Tyson said in episode 4 that it made sense for the two of them to stick together. Tyson created what seemed to be a solid 5 at that point, and would go on to make other alliances along the way. But just as importantly, or maybe more important, Tyson looked ahead to see potential problems, such as what will happen if Aris and Vetus are allowed to join together and move forward in the game. So he started planting seeds against that early on.
Yes. And I think what was amazing about how he did that was that he was always very mindful of keeping it as a group discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that he even talked about in some of his confessionals, about how he didn't want to be seen as the ringleader and as the person that was coordinating things. So it really was, let's take this group of people and talk about it. And that planting of those seeds was really what I think helped carry him through, because he he was letting other people feel like they were just as important as he was, when really he was the one kind of maneuvering through everything, but allowing other people to feel like they were the ones that were doing it instead. So that only worked to his benefit, because when everybody is saying Tyson's in charge and running the show, they're all like, no, he's not. I've been just as involved as he has been. And so it became kind of this interesting, like, dynamic to see people feeling like they want to own their own moves because everyone's crediting Tyson, when really Tyson is the one that's doing it. But he's making it appear as if it's a group.
Yeah. Yeah. He directed vote after vote, and everybody, or almost everybody, felt that he had their backs. And, mm-hmm. you know, as the season went on, he would identify a smaller outside group and then everyone else would target them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that group was gone, there'd kind of be like a new subgroup come into the crosshairs. And so nobody really ever had the chance to gather enough people for a coup.
Right.
You know, in the final seven tribal council, Hayden declared that Tyson was controlling everyone, and he was right. But it was too late.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting to watch the response to that, because I do feel like it was almost like the pink elephant in the room that everybody kept kind of talking about, but nobody was really doing anything about. And Tyson's just kind of sitting there going, ooh, that's not good for me, that everyone's saying that I'm in charge and that I'm going to win. He's like, thanks, you know, thanks mm-hmm. for recognizing that, but it's not good for my game. But he had put himself in such a great spot that it didn't negatively affect him, which is incredible, because I do think so much of Tyson's game, there are parts of it that if anyone had done those same things in other seasons, it would have backfired and they would have been gone. But Tyson really was making it work, even though he was doing things that were very tricky and very potentially problematic, but he pulled them off so nicely because he started at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, another example, when Sierra had an epiphany at Tribal Council and decided on the spot to force a rock draw, Tyson later told Rob that he had very little hesitation about it. And this is when I, you know, just kind of launched into this, another example of him thinking forward. You know, he knew that if he didn't do this, he had a very small chance of winning. And now some of the players tried to tell Monica later, because Monica was like, well, I will never turn against them. They, you know, he drew a rock for me. And the other players were like, no, he drew a rock for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And they were right.
Right.
Because that was the only way he was going to go forward and win.
Mm-hmm. I might know a thing or two about that.
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, and this is one of those, I want to go off on a tangent again.
Okay.
It may initially seem like it was mathematically a terrible idea for Sierra to do this, because there was a 67% chance that someone on Sierra's side would go home.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually made sense, because otherwise there was about a 100% chance that she was never making it to Final Three.
Right.
Jervis and Monica had slipped and basically told her she was number four.
Mm-hmm.
If Tyson had drawn the bad rock and not come back from Redemption Island, then Sierra was almost guaranteed to be in the final three and would have had a good case for the win. I think she would have won. As she said in interviews afterwards, she played to win, not to come in fourth.
Right.
And this is the side that somewhat reminds me of another person who drew rocks
mm-hmm.
because they knew that if the vote went against their side, they were doomed.
Yes. Yes. And this is the thing that makes that whole rock draw scenario so terribly sad, but also sometimes a necessary component of your game. If you want to win, then you have to take those really big risks. And if you are the one person who's not willing to take that risk, well, then you're going to be shining like a bright light and everyone's going to know that you flipped and everyone's going to know that you're not the person who's willing to make that move. And so I understand completely why Sierra said, I'm doing this because mm-hmm. I'm not going to finish fourth. And it really put Tyson in a situation where he's like, well, I'm going to just play the odds and see what happens. And he also knew that Redemption Island was waiting for him, which I think is helpful, too, when you have yes. a potential rock draw. But I do think that it is, even though it's something that we don't see very often, there is a really great argument as to why it is done. Because if you are in that situation where there's been that line in the sand drawn, and if you don't go with your crew at that point, you're done and you're dead in the water, you're not going to win, then draw a rock. And it's unfortunate, but sometimes that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, getting back to Tyson and that rock draw, once Katie was sent packing by it, Tyson pretty well had everything all sewn up. The only worry was Monica, and while she kept giving him reason to be a bit nervous, he actually had her locked in far better than even he realized.
Yeah, yeah. I think that Monica was an interesting player because she is someone that I do think played a lot with her heart, and she was getting such assurances from both Jervis and from Tyson that she really was probably one of the most loyal people we've ever seen play Survivor, because she really was believing everything that they were telling her. And honestly, she was playing a hell of a game. She was winning immunity challenges. She was a beast out there with the things that she was capable of doing. But I, unfortunately for her, I think she found herself in that position that we see a lot of older women fall into when it comes to Survivor. Like, you're not credited with all of these incredible things you're doing, because when Tyson does it, it's kind of funny, or it's entertaining, or it's maniacal, or there's something about it that makes you pay attention. Whereas if Monica does it, it doesn't have that same effect and it doesn't have that same response. And we saw a lot of people questioning, like, I don't really know who Monica is, and I don't really know what Monica's about. And Monica's just a nice person.
You know? She's a neat lady.
Yeah, she's a neat lady. So I do think that, you know, she kind of fell into that role. But I also will say, and I'm going to go off on a tangent too here, she suffered because of Brad Culpepper. I mean, that's unfortunate for her, but I think that that definitely put her in a very tough spot because Brad was her loved one.
Yes. Now, I do have some thoughts about Monica as they pertain to the first rule, but they relate to Jervis. So I want to talk about Jervis strategy-wise first. Because he was really Tyson's partner in crime, even beyond coconut banditry. In the fifth episode, Jervis said he needed to get on board with the others and making moves or he'd be gone. The following episode, he said he wanted to make sure he played this time. He had definitely learned some things since the first season. I almost said his first season, but no, his first season, the first season. Same thing.
The first season.
Now, in theory, Jervis should have turned on Tyson at some point, because it was pretty clear he couldn't beat Tyson at the end. The problem is, I don't know when he could have done it. I sat there. I analyzed it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He seemed to be caught in a trap, kind of similar to the one where Laurel would later find herself in Ghost Island. Every time he thought about making a move against Tyson, it would become abundantly obvious that either he couldn't get the people together because they were all still loyal to Tyson, or if people did want to do it, well, they were going to vote Jervis out right after they voted Tyson out.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of keep him around as that shield, but then you realize as soon as he is gone, if you pull it off, then you're the next to go.
Yeah.
So it puts you in a very, very difficult spot for sure.
Right. For example, he told Rob that Monica made it clear to him that she would never go against the two of them. And, you know, that's great news in some ways to have someone that loyal. But it was also bad news for him because he could never use her to flip against Tyson.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now there is a corollary to this first rule that specifically says while you're scheming and plotting, you need to make sure the other players know about it at least somewhat. In their duo, Jervis had some of the ideas and strategies. But he admittedly used Tyson the way you just said, as a shield.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is that also means Tyson gets the credit.
Yeah.
You know, you want Tyson to take the blame. Well, that also means he gets the credit.
Yes. And this is why I think part of Redemption Island worked against Jervis. And also there was this rumor mill, if you will, about Tyson that also didn't help Jervis. Because when you've got people at Redemption Island talking about things with other people and then coming to the arena and saying things about people, then everyone's getting to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's festering in people's minds. And then that narrative really almost becomes the truth because so many people are repeating it because that's what they keep hearing. And I think that's what we saw with Tyson. We saw so many people pointing out the fact that, you know, I hope you all like second place. Tyson's playing a great game. And it was being openly acknowledged so much so that I don't think Jervis really had a place to go other than I have to get rid of him because he is getting all of the credit. But Jervis, I think, was looking at it as, well, I'm not getting the heat for it. But then at the same time, he's not getting the credit for it either. So it really put him in a very, very tough spot, because I don't think Tyson could have done what he did without Jervis. But unfortunately, he got the credit for everything both of them did together.
Yeah, and that's why I said a few minutes ago that he could not beat Tyson at the end. If he couldn't flip on Tyson and he couldn't beat Tyson at the end the way things were, his only hope was to make his own moves more obvious. But he didn't succeed in doing that either.
Right, yeah.
Now, we also have to credit Tyson for keeping such a close eye on Jervis. Tyson told Rob in the post-game interview that he was a little worried about Jervis getting too close to Hayden because they were bonding over football. But Tyson countered by preparing to say that Hayden had told him that he could never beat Jervis because Jervis was too well-liked. So, you know, that made sure that Jervis wouldn't ever want to flip with Hayden. If Hayden's mm-hmm. thinking this, allegedly, which wasn't necessarily true, right. then, you know, Tyson had that all plotted out to make sure, no, Jervis won't flip on me with Hayden.
Right. Yeah, Tyson really was controlling so much of the narrative that was going on, just in regards to other people, even though there was that narrative about Tyson that was happening, that he was so good at everything he was doing. But I do think that he was so good at also, like we said at the beginning, planting seeds about other people, mm-hmm. that he was really controlling that dynamic and how people felt about other people without it being about who we're going to vote off. It's just these little like ideas of, oh, you know, this is a thing that you might want to just think about, but not we need to vote this person out. So you're letting that person construct in their own mind what they want the outcome to be instead of telling them what the outcome should be. And he was very, very good at manipulating people to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Going ahead now, moving to Monica, you know, she told Rob that she also felt like she was in a similar spot in as Jervis, in that if she ever flipped on the duo, she believed she would be the next to go, because what she said was the overall climate was very anti-Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all the lobbying attempts aimed at getting her to turn, she knew that she had zero chance if she didn't stick with the guys.
Well, and that anti-Monica comes from Brad Culpepper. I mean,
some of it. But I mean, I think a lot of it, and Will. Well, we'll hold off until about, let's see, what rule? About the fifth rule, I think. hold on, let me check.
Poster. Yeah.
There were other reasons, too. You are right about the, you know, Brad stuff. Although, I will say, Brad being voted off was the best thing to happen to Monica's game.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I think that there was all of that leading up to it where, right. you know, you've already referenced the, you know, F you, Brad Culpepper, mm-hmm. and the, you know, the middle fingers being flashed and things being said about him at Redemption Arena. Mm-hmm. So I do think that a lot of that then was thrust upon Monica because she's associating with this guy, and because right. she's associating with him, well, then she must not have much of a backbone because he's shushing women and all of these things.
Oh, yes.
And I do think that she did not get the credit that she deserved for being the strong player that she was, because people thought that she was cowering to her, you know, her husband, Brad. And I think she tried really hard to combat that. But unfortunately, that was the narrative that people had in their brain about Brad. And so that worked against her, even though she was clearly doing very well in forming bonds with people and coming up with strategies as to how to move forward in the game. And really being loyal. So she was doing a lot of the really great things you need to do to be a great player in Survivor. But unfortunately, she tied herself to two other really great players and found herself not getting the credit that she deserved, too, at the end.
Okay. I am going to push back on you a little bit. There.
Okay.
So
I like this.
Yeah, you're right about, you know, she won those challenges. She was good at that. She was loyal. We'll get into some other aspects of her game where she did well. I did not see much in the way of strategy from her. I saw a lot of talking, but I did not see a lot of strategy that actually ended up happening. Now, there are some things, again, we'll talk about later,
mm-hmm.
When we get to Appendix B, for example. But what are you saying in terms of like the strategic things she was doing, the scheming and plotting aspect?
Well, I mean, I do think she managed to glom on to people who were willing to play the game with her. So she had Jervis and she had Tyson.
Right.
But I do think that part of what Monica was doing was just what you were saying. She did a lot of talking, but I think when she was doing that talking, she was going through strategically what was going to happen. And that was one thing that Tyson got annoyed with her, right? That mm-hmm. she talked too much and she was constantly checking and rechecking about what was happening and who was going to. So I do think that she was part of those strategic conversations and kind of working things out. But I think the difference between someone like Tyson is, here's what we're going to do, and then we're just going to walk away. We're not going to talk about it again. I think Monica was someone who felt like she needed a lot of reassuring, and she needed a lot of, I don't know, people like telling her again and again and again, this is what's going to happen, because maybe she didn't believe them as much as she should. So I do think that she should get credit for those strategic conversations that she was having with Tyson and that she was having with Jervis. But maybe she wasn't the one leading the charge. But I do think for most of the game, she was very much involved in those decisions that were happening. But again, only one person is going to get credit for it. And Tyson was the one getting the credit for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. We can move on to the second rule, which says not to scheme and plot too much and to keep your scheming secret. And Tyson actually broke a couple parts of this rule, but it didn't matter because of the way he went about it. One part is that players shouldn't be in an obvious duo. This was blood versus water. Obvious duos were already baked in. Aris and Vetus, the mothers and daughters. There was even another pair of players without loved ones who were clearly together in Hayden and Caleb. So Tyson and Jervis being an obvious duo didn't stand out as being a big deal, and thus they weren't targeted for that reason in the same way that duos would be and have been throughout history.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a great point, because it is true. When you've got a mother daughter that you can point to and say, well, and a, you know, brothers and say, hey, what about these guys? They're certainly not going to be paying as much attention to Jervis and Tyson as they would be looking at Laura and Sierra. Yeah, and I do think, and there was so much attention put on Vetus and Aris, it was kind of insane. But that also stemmed from Tyson. So I do think that he had a really good way of thrusting the spotlight onto those people instead of it being put on to he and Jervis.
Yeah. Now, another thing this rule says not to do is being the obvious leader if alliances get out in the open. And you already talked about this a little bit, but, you know, it was clear at certain points to many of the others that Tyson was indeed the leader. So early on when you were talking about it, wasn't as much. But the problem was they had all been aligned with him at some point, and they came to the realization too late for it to help them. Being seen as the leader is worrisome when others are trying to get together to cut off the head of the snake, as we often hear. But when those others are part of the snake's body, they don't want the head gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on to Monica. Watching the season, you probably wouldn't get the idea that she schemed and plotted too much. But others playing with her did think that from time to time. In the sixth episode, Kat got it into her head that Monica was scheming too much, which she really wasn't. So she decided to target Monica, which caused the rest of the tribe to decide that Kat was scheming and plotting too much and vote her out. It was a supreme piece of irony.
But I do think that this goes back to that idea of the too much talking. And I think that, you know, it's perceived differently when someone like Monica is doing it as opposed to someone like Jervis is doing it. We saw a lot of conversations where people were talking to Monica about other options, right? And people were talking to even Jervis about other options and things that they could do. And I do think that they were willing to have those conversations and they were willing to kind of spin it in their brain. But it goes back to the relationship that they had, and they're realizing, yes, I'm not going to cut off the head of the snake because I am part of that. So I do think that there, you know, Monica's talking too much became perceived as over strategizing.
Yes.
When I think it was really just, that's the way that she strategized, was she talked about stuff, and it was really just the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. She was talking and talking to anyone and everyone. And some of it was strategic and some of it wasn't. Sometimes she'd just chat with people for a long time and other people would be watching going, what are they talking about?
Right.
And, you know, now in some cases, in other games, this could easily get you voted out. And it did seem like she was in danger several times during the season. How many times did we hear Monica is on the bottom? We're going to vote out Monica next. But somebody else always came to the forefront. There was always a bigger fish to fry. And her allies kept her safe.
Yeah.
You know, in episode 13, Tyson told us that Monica wouldn't stop talking and playing too hard. And then he told Jervis, she's not great at Survivor. And then he added, but she came in handy. Now, Tyson did have to call Monica after that and apologize to her, you know, which heard about in the post-game interviews with Rob. But, you know, I do think that was a reflection of what they thought about her at the time.
Oh, and I do think that a lot of what Sierra was trying to convince Monica of was true, that Jervis and Tyson saw Monica for the real person she was. And she was a nice person and she was a trusting individual. And she was someone that they could build up and make her feel significant and important. And they saw her being that loyal person that they needed. So Monica offered everything that Tyson and Jervis needed in a third, because even though she was really great at challenges, it worked to their benefit. Because if you're working as a, as you know, a triplicate, if you will, if one of you wins, it just benefits all three of you. And so she became everything that they needed to her own detriment, because she wasn't the one that was running the show. Tyson was, but she thought she was just as involved as Jervis and Tyson were.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as for Jervis, we discussed in the first rule how he didn't showcase his scheming enough. So doing it too much wasn't really an issue. But it almost was at one point, as Tyson made a point of telling Jervis something that appears in this rule. And this was at the beginning of the episode following the rock draw. He noted that the prior tribal council was a perfect example of why you don't tell the person who's going that they're going.
Right.
You know, it allowed too much scrambling, led to the rock draw that could have ended Tyson's game.
Yeah, for sure. And I, that's the one thing that I feel like Tyson had worked out more than Jervis and Monica, was a better understanding of how you approach situations and how you approach people and what type of information you share. I think someone like Monica felt like she could be a little more open and honest because that's the way that she was, not realizing that she was really throwing herself under the bus sometimes while doing it. And Jervis, I don't think, understood how much the game of Survivor had changed in 13 years. And so he came in wanting to play, which I think he did.
Right.
But he wasn't able to play the way Tyson was, because Tyson had seen Survivor in its more recent form and how that scheming and plotting worked. And so I think for Tyson, he was able to find that balance that Jervis and Monica probably didn't or weren't able to, because of personalities and because of just lack of experience.
Right, right. Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. We're back, so let's get back to the show. Okay, the third rule talks about being flexible. How do you think Tyson did here?
Oh my God, Tyson is just good at everything he does. So I would say that as far as flexibility is concerned, he did it when he needed to, but it wasn't so extreme that it was detrimental to his game.
Yeah.
I mean, he kept he kept Jervis and Monica right where he needed them, but he also had the ability to keep other options open if he needs to, because he did form relationships with everybody and he did have a bond with people. And the fact that he could be put out there as the leader and the one that's going to win and still manage to win and have nobody end up turning on him was really quite impressive. And I think that that just, it highlighted his ability to maneuver through multiple situations and know how to combat those situations and know what to do in response to it. And that really stemmed from his ability to be flexible.
Yeah. Yeah. We discussed earlier how Tyson joined up with Jervis in the early goings. The two of them formed a solid five alliance, but Tyson had a number of different allies along the way. He proposed a final five swap tribe alliance, including everyone who didn't have a loved one left in the game. He made the final three alliance with Jervis and Monica right at the merge, which obviously ended up holding. And he kind of switched people in and out as necessary and wasn't afraid to move against people when it needed to happen. Or, as Vetus would say in the final tribal council, before they could do it to him.
Yes, yes.
In the reunion, He even mentioned that he always had an A, B, and C plan for anything that could happen.
Yeah. And well, and that's why he was always looking ahead. And I mean, he talked about how, you know, little sleep that he got because he was constantly running through scenarios right. in his brain. And I think that that just goes to show he was prepared for anything. And so if this is the way the vote goes, then this is the way I have to approach it. And if this happens, I have to go this route. So he really was going through every potential scenario, which really led him to where he was in the final three.
Yeah. Now, we already talked about how Jervis should have theoretically moved against Tyson, but basically couldn't, and how Monica was in a similar situation. So their flexibility was limited because of the choices they made, but those choices also kept them in the game to the final three.
Yeah. No, I think that it's one of those terrible components of Survivor is that you have to lock yourself into certain things, which can then ultimately work against you later. Now, someone like Tyson locking into that final three worked to his benefit. But someone like Jervis and Monica, it didn't work to their benefit, but it did in a way because it kept them in the game, but then they couldn't win. And so it is this very strange dynamic where if Jervis and Monica had been better about doing the things that Tyson was doing in all of those potential options, then maybe. And I do think that Monica was presented with quite a few of those options and didn't take them because I think in Monica's mind, she thought if I turn on Jervis and Tyson, then I'm going to be seen as being disloyal and no one's going to vote for me in the end. But I think someone like Monica could have pulled that off if she had voted them out, because I think it would have gained the respect that she was looking for from people who were on the jury.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. The fourth rule tells players not to let their emotions control them. And Tyson pretty much always followed this rule. There were several times when he could have changed up his strategy due to his feelings, but he didn't. One obvious time was when he didn't swap for Rachel after she'd been voted out. I'm sure he wanted to, but he knew that he stood a better chance of winning the game than she did.
Yes.
On a related note, it would have been understandable if he'd been mad at Monica for what Brad did in voting out Rachel. But Tyson just kind of shook his head and said Brad didn't know what he was doing, and he didn't let that affect his own game.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was good at that aspect. And then later on, he followed this rule from the opposite side as he planned to target Aris, even though he liked him. You know, and that example is even ensconced in the rules now.
Yeah. And I'm curious if him basically voting himself out of the previous season that he was on led to his understanding that you can't let emotions change your vote for you, because I think that's what happened in his previous season, was that he didn't listen to his aligned group of people and how the vote was going to go. He let himself get in there and start thinking, and I think let his emotions make that decision and ultimately got himself voted out.
Yeah.
So he probably thought better of that this time and didn't want to find himself in that type of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Monica, on the other hand, definitely did let emotions affect her gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back at my interview with her after One World, she told me, "My personality is such that it's difficult to break my spirit. It's something I pride myself on, being a genuinely happy person. The mother instinct in me was like, let's make lemonade out of lemons. Maybe it will turn into a wonderful opportunity for me." And those are all very nice thoughts in real life. And they can be incredibly dangerous on Survivor, as she found out when Colton stabbed her in the back on that season.
Yeah.
But there was at least one time this season when Monica made an emotional decision as well. Though that was for an opposite reason to being happy. At the episode 9 tribal council, when Vetus attacked her in that tribal council, she switched her vote from Katie to him, which could have caused problems if there had been an idol.
Mm-hmm.
She was lucky that there wasn't, and that Tyson was willing to forgive and forget.
Yeah. And I think Tyson probably did that because he realized how necessary she was to his game.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, she did exactly what Tyson did in his previous season that ended up getting himself voted out. So I think he thoroughly understands the consequences of doing something like that, whereas Monica was that knee-jerk reaction of being emotional. And I do think that we did see Monica be very emotional because she was getting personally attacked quite a lot throughout the season, including, you know, Brad Culpepper getting attacked. And so I think that can really wear on a person when not only are you being attacked, but your loved one is being attacked, and there's nothing that you can do about it because they're on the other tribe. So I think that it put her in more of a defensive situation where she had to try to justify who she was, and it didn't really matter, but she thought it did. And so I think that, unfortunately for her, that became something she just couldn't overcome, was because there was so much attacking being done to Monica. And we never saw Tyson getting attacked like that. Really, Tyson was being put up on a pedestal all the time about how great he was playing the game. And then everyone was kind of shitting on Monica, excuse my language, but, you know, that's what was happening. So I kind of feel bad for her that was the dynamic she found herself in.
Yeah. Not much to say about Jervis here. I think he was, again, similar to Tyson and, you know, voting out Aris. He didn't allow friendship to interfere. But he was emotional in terms of his celebration and stuff. But that wasn't really gameplay. So not really much to add about him here.
Yeah, I think that was just Jervis.
Yeah. The fifth rule talks about the social game and reminds players they need to pretend to be nice. Now, even as much as Tyson was on a mission, he still retained that more fun-loving side of him. And yes, I keep using the term fun-loving because it's the one he used to describe himself in the final tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
And no, Tyson, it's not one word. It's two. but back in episode 3, even as he was talking about how he needed to make it to the end, he also said it's a game and too many people take it too seriously and ruin their lives. It's possible to be both focused on winning and also to make sure you have fun at the same time.
Yeah.
And Tyson really epitomized this.
I think this is one of Tyson's greatest gifts, is his ability to interact with a group of people and be entertaining while also kind of being a jerk at the same time. But it's coming across as like funny. I mean, all of the stuff about when the tree was getting cut down by Aris and how he was kind of presenting that to the group, and he was doing it in a comical way and it was entertaining and funny, but he was also providing those little bits of information about Aris that he wanted people to start noticing. And so he's got this way of doing what a lot of comedians do. You present something that's almost a very uncomfortable situation or idea, but you do it in a comedic fashion. And so people can see the truth in it, but they can also laugh about it. And that's something that Tyson pulled off beautifully. And not very many people have the ability to truly be themselves in the way that Tyson could be. I mean, the fact that the guy was stealing food as much as he was, and it was so entertaining and funny to the viewers. But I was on a season when someone stole food and it was horrifying and terrible and bad. But you couldn't help but laugh when you saw Tyson doing it because of the way that he presented it to the audience. And so it's a gift that he has that very few people who have played Survivor have. So it's just something that he's just naturally gifted at. And it worked exceptionally well for him this season.
Yeah. So there was a time, I don't remember, I think it was one of the first times I met Tyson. And it was in Reno at a Run It Up Reno event. And we were sitting down to dinner, and it was a sit yourself type of situation. And there were some people at Run It Up Reno who knew the Survivor people and some who were just there to play poker. And you couldn't necessarily tell who they were. But so a couple of women sat down, younger women sat down at the same table as me. And then Tyson was there, too. And they said, oh, you know, that we were introducing you know, I introduced myself and said, yeah, I have a podcast, etc. And they said, oh, yeah, we love your podcast. Well, Tyson wasn't going to let some polite banter just lay there.
Right.
And this is the type of situation you were talking about. He says, oh, you do? What part of it do you like the most exactly? Totally putting them on the spot because they had just been making a polite comment. And they were like, and I don't remember what happened exactly after that, but it was, you know, it was hysterical.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I'd have felt the same way if I were them, but, you know, he just had the way to do that sense of humor.
Yeah. He can call you out, but make you laugh at the same time and not make it uncomfortable for people that are in the surrounding area. Yeah. It's really impressive. I loved watching it. And I will say, too, to his credit, the fact that he became so close to Jervis was definitely to his benefit as well, because mm-hmm. Jervis is a very fun loving kind of guy right. as well. And so to have those two personalities working together the way that they were, they fed off of each other. When you right. have someone who is willing to steal coconuts with you and to go along with this and giggle about it and hide in the woods, the grubs were eating the coconuts or whatever. I mean, just the whole thing yes. about it was hysterical. But I think Jervis really helped that component of Tyson so much, and Tyson helped it with Jervis. And so it really, they were able to really thrive because they had each other.
Yeah. Now, another particular area where we saw the importance of Tyson's ability to play nice was his relationship with Monica. At the merge, Tyson told us he had to pretend to be nice and be very patient with her because she was driving him nuts.
Yes.
We heard a lot of talk from other players about Tyson allegedly telling them that Monica was a puppy dog who would just follow her, who would just follow him no matter what. What we actually saw was Tyson describing to Sierra that Monica would go with him because he'd shown her more love than anyone else in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which was 100% true. Some of the others were just plain mean to her. Mm-hmm. And then they wondered why she wouldn't flip with them.
Right. Yeah. And this is what I was saying earlier about the different narratives that were associated with each of them. Mm-hmm. You know, Tyson was being thrust up onto a pedestal and people were being very mean to Monica. Tyson was never mean to Monica. He might have said things about Monica to mm-hmm. other people and, you know, during his confessionals, but he really did treat her the way that she wanted people to treat her and the way that she expected to be treated. So I do think that that was to his benefit as far as his playing with Monica, because other people just weren't doing that with her.
Yeah. Now, as for Monica herself, she told me in our interview after One World, there was so much drama going on, and I felt like it's best to sit back, stay out of the fray, stay out of the arguments, watch and outwork everybody else on my tribe. And I think she generally did that again this season. There was drama around her, but it was caused by other people, often about her. Sometimes yeah. she was completely oblivious to it. You know, mm-hmm. like the whole situation with Kat that I mentioned earlier. She
right.
had no idea until someone brought it up to her. She right. stayed out of the drama, although the drama sometimes had a way of bringing itself to her.
Well, and I think that speaks volumes of the type of game that she was playing, because she did find herself in the center of so much of it. And I think it was because she was with Tyson and she was with Jervis and they were kind of running the show. And so she really was at that center of the entire game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she told Rob, "I'm just nice." And of course, she talked in Final Tribal about how she's a neat lady, and it seemed like no one there had ever met somebody nice before. Now, in Survivor, being truly nice is an uncommon commodity.
Yes.
So maybe it really did throw some of her opponents a bit. But I also think she did some things that were annoying. And she was just oblivious to what she was doing, maybe even after the season was over.
And it's quite possible, because I do think that sometimes it takes seeing yourself mm-hmm. in a situation in order to understand how you really come across. And maybe she just never realized that her talking as much as she did, even though in her mind, she's just trying to make sure that she understands what's happening and that everybody's mm-hmm. on the same page, that it's coming across negatively and that people aren't appreciating it. And I do think that this is what makes Survivor so hard, because sometimes you don't really understand how you come across to other people. And we've talked about it a lot, about perception being reality.
Yes.
And if someone sees you a certain way and starts to think about you a certain way, that's the way you are to them, regardless of how you really might be. She is a very nice person, and she, I'm sure, is a great individual, and she and the mother and all of those things, and wife. But what she was putting out there was rubbing some people the wrong way. And then that became what was associated with Monica.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all know. I know that I know some people, both at work and not at work, who once they get started talking, they will not stop.
Yeah.
And you may joke with that, you know, with other friends or other coworkers and the like. But in general, they're very nice people. They just won't stop talking.
Right.
And now imagine being on a tribe with them. Now, you may right. not have to imagine, because you've lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying anything about any of your tribe mates, because I don't know that for sure. But you know, every little thing that someone does, it can be annoying, especially when you're with them for that long.
Oh, yeah. No, it builds because you know, you don't get that break where even if it's a coworker, you're going home for the night and you're not going to see them until the next day. When you're with them 24/7 and you have to have conversations with that person, yeah, it definitely increases everything that they do. And that you notice that this person does that and this becomes annoying and that rubs you the wrong way because it's a constant thing that you're dealing with 24/7.
Yeah. Moving on to Jervis, he, of course, was a nice guy.
Yes.
You know, that's a big part of what he was counting on as part of his strategy, I think, being a nicer version of Tyson.
Yes. And I think that he, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to cut you off,
but okay.
I think it was great that he recognized that, too, that he wanted to be a nicer version of Tyson because he already knew that Tyson was going to come across as a nice guy.
Yeah. Although a lot of people talked about Tyson will have all the blood on his hands. So I think they expected some bitterness to go towards Tyson. And
yeah.
So being a nicer Tyson, I don't know, a Nyson, you know, that, you know, but it just didn't end up working out that way.
Right. No, because Tyson doesn't come across as a mean spirited person like we talked about. So, yeah, there's really no blood on his hands because you're like, oh, that's funny. He just wants Survivor.
Yeah. All right. The sixth rule warns against being too much of a threat. And I mentioned in the intro that Tyson came into the season already being seen as a threat, which is something that Laura had mentioned in her post-game interview with Rob. We've discussed previously in returning player seasons that sometimes there's just nothing you can do if you come in labeled as a threat.
Right.
But Tyson worked to make sure that didn't happen. Part of it was happenstance, as he should have been seen as a physical challenge threat, but he injured his shoulder in that episode 3 sumo immunity challenge. And he played up that injury to make it seem worse than it was throughout the game, thus reducing his threat level.
Right.
5 episodes later, Aris told Vidas that Tyson wouldn't be a challenge threat because of his shoulder. And this move by Tyson has really become a classic example, in my opinion, of a great way to reduce your threat level if you would otherwise stand out.
Yes.
In fact, I'm going to make sure it's listed in the next version of the rules because I'm not sure how I've left it out until now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's not something that you see happen very often where someone, I mean, there are injuries that happen, but they kind of happen and then everybody moves on from it and you don't really see it again. Whereas, you know, we saw Tyson wearing a sling. We saw him, you know, it definitely was affecting his ability to do things. But we also heard him talking about how he was playing it up because it was going to help him. And I think part of Tyson being viewed as a threat really stemmed from more of the physical ability as opposed to necessarily his strategic ability. I don't think he walked into that game with people thinking he was going to have such a strategic mindset because of the way that we had seen him play in his previous seasons. And so he downplayed the one component that I think people were really focusing on as Tyson being a threat.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know, you know, I was watching him from the moment he hurt his shoulder and he had that sling, but then the rest of the time, and I you probably can't see it. He was walking and you could see that his right shoulder, he was favoring. He kept it like close to his body. Like if you ever go back and rewatch it again or anyone else, just watch him. His left arm would hang out and his right, he would keep close. Now, part of that was probably because it really did hurt for a while. But I think he got so used to doing that to show, oh, look, it's still here, even though the sling isn't here.
Right.
So
he's a great actor.
Yes. Yes. And the fact remains, even with that he should have been seen by everyone as an overall game threat.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely should have been.
You know, from right after the merge, Vidas was saying that Tyson and Jervis were the most powerful people there. The thing was, Tyson had already planted the seeds that we discussed earlier about how Vidas and Aris were the threats. That helped keep the target, the crosshairs, pointed away from Tyson.
Right.
Plus, there were the other duos, like we discussed in the second rule. And as I mentioned in the first rule, so many people felt like Tyson had their backs. They didn't feel that way about Aris and Vidas.
And if I can just jump in here,
yeah,
too,
absolutely.
What I think is interesting is Aris showed exactly what Tyson was not willing to show because Aris voted Laura out. And everyone saw that they had kind of a close relationship, right? That Laura was was kind of like his tag along, that Laura, she didn't really have a great place to fit in. Mm-hmm. But Aris was the one that was like, I think we should vote Laura out. And I think when you do something like that, people start to question, well, how loyal is he going to be to any of us? Because he just decided to vote someone out who had been very close to him.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyson was never willing to do that. So he never said we should vote out Monica. He never said we should vote out Jervis. He let other people say those things, but he didn't do that. And so I think that probably helped him gain more of a following and have people want to work with him, because there was no question about where his loyalty lies, because he wasn't willing to say, I'm going to vote these people out, whereas Aris was.
Right. Right. I mean, it was the same mistake that Brad made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that caused Caleb to realize, hey, wait a minute.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, so it wasn't until episode 11 that Hayden really saw the light and identified Tyson as a huge threat. By episode 12, Tyson told us, I'm threat number one, and everyone knows that, and I know that. But as we've said several times throughout the podcast so far, by the time something like that happened, it was too late for the others to do anything about it.
Yeah, the numbers were just dwindling, and it was just working
right
to his benefit, for sure.
Yes. And then, of course, Tyson won the last two immunity challenges when his shoulder had mostly healed and he didn't have to worry about being seen as a threat at that point. Not to mention he wanted to make sure nobody had a chance to flip on him.
Right. And I do think, too, that, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but, you know, he not only did he win the immunities, but he also had some comfort and solace knowing that where the hidden immunity idol was. So, you know, that I think is also going to help you play your game that much better, because that component is not part of your strategy that's right going through your brain.
Right. Moving on to Jervis, he was listed alongside Tyson when I mentioned Vetus pointing them out as a threat. But as we've talked about already, Jervis always had Tyson the shield, which was his plan.
Right. Yeah. And unfortunately, it backfired on him.
Yes. But as far as being a threat, he was covered.
For sure.
It just hurt him in other places.
Mm-hmm.
As for Monica, she was never really a threat in the game. She might have been if Brad stuck around, which, as I mentioned earlier, him getting voted out was the best thing for her. But without Brad there, she was never seen as a threat.
Which is crazy, because she was so good at the immunity challenges and won so many of them.
Yeah.
You would think that there would have been more of a component of her being a threat. But I think that was lost because of the way in which she was presenting herself to the tribes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we can move on to the seventh rule, which covers dealing with idols and advantages. You just mentioned the idols, and Tyson was the only person this season to find an idol, and he found two of them. And the way he found them, too, was what was so interesting to me. First, he got information on a clue from Hayden and knew from that where the idol would be. Nobody else apparently figured it out, but Tyson got it. And then the second time, he got it again from someone else, in this case, Sierra, reading the clue out loud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowing how to deal with idols isn't just about digging around everywhere. It's about playing it smart. And Tyson certainly did that in both cases.
Yes. And I do think that that just helped. It helped that he had played the game before.
Right.
And so when he's having this conversation with Hayden and I think, was it Caleb that were providing, oh, well, and, you know, and he was just kind of inquiring, like, oh, well, what did it say? What was, and he was just acting kind of aloof about the whole thing. But really, in his mind, he's like, I can't believe they're giving me, right, they're giving me the clues and they don't even realize what they're doing. And I think that that just goes to show, when you're playing with people who have played before, they're more receptive to what those clues mean. And they're more interested in kind of working it out. And it's not just because they're curious. They want to find the idol.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that, and he managed to find both of them.
Right. Now, his use of them, maybe not as great. He used it unnecessarily in episode 11, but it was a just-in-case move, and it's absolutely understandable why he did it. Better safe than sorry.
Right.
Besides, he was then, as we discussed, able to figure out where the replacement idol was and get that one, too. And he didn't end up needing that one either, though, of course, just having it made sure no one else did, because we saw, like, Hayden and Sierra on a massive search for it, which they would have found it if Tyson hadn't grabbed it already.
Right.
Now, he ended up giving it to Jervis in front of the jury, of course, to play just in case Monica had a change of heart. She didn't, but it once again reinforced who was really in charge of that duo.
Yeah, because Monica was angry by that because she thought, well, now they knew that I might have turned on them or they thought that I was going to. So, yeah, I mean, it worked in his favor because he was able to do that in front of the jury and show Jervis his loyalty. But then it caused Monica to question the loyalty. But still, Monica didn't.
Well, and the thing
anything.
Was, Monica should have taken, I mean, Monica did plenty to make them question that, you know, I
yeah.
mean, in
oh,
her mind,
sure.
she was locked in. And we'll get to that, I think, in a moment here. But she there was a reason that they suspected she might turn on them.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Let's take a brief look at Appendix A, which is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting, and says to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. Once Rachel was voted out, Tyson knew what his end goal was, and he was always thinking about how to get there. He adhered mostly to the weak versus strong by focusing on how people fit into his alliance, getting rid of the strong players who opposed him, keeping the weaker ones around until it was the right time for them to go.
I agree. Okay. I thought you were going to add more
no,
to that.
No, that
no,
was
but
it.
No, I mean, I do think that if anyone of the season you can really point to and say they were constantly thinking about that end goal, it was Tyson. I mean, Tyson was constantly working through the configurations of how this vote out was going to affect him moving forward. And it was really an incredible thing to watch him maneuver and figure out as the game moved on. So I think out of anyone in the season, he did that more so than anyone.
Yeah. Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. We're back, so let's get back to the show. All right, so now we can move on to Appendix B, which covers the jury phase and final tribal council. By episode 12, Hayden was telling everyone else that he hoped they liked second place because Tyson had first. And his view seemed to be the predominant one at the time. In Rob's interviews, Hayden and Laura both said they came into final tribal council already knowing they'd vote Tyson because he clearly played the best game. Laura added something I mentioned earlier that people knew Tyson was someone they had to watch before the game, and he still beat them. So, yeah I mean, there wasn't much that really had to come out of tribal council, I don't think.
No, but I do think that this is one of those situations where Jervis and Monica needed to separate themselves from Tyson as much as they can. If they thought that he was going to be the one that was going to have the blood on his hands, then they needed to put the blood on his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one of them really did that.
No.
And it was almost like they resigned themselves to the fact that, well, everybody thinks Tyson's the best and we're going to let him keep being built up as the best. And we were just the sidekicks. Monica got defensive and got upset with how people were perceiving her and then was trying to justify the type of person she was. And Jervis really just kind of was quiet, I think, and really not stepping up and saying, listen, Tyson couldn't have done any of this without me. Like we were doing this together. We were in this from the beginning. But that's the problem that you run into when you have a duo from the beginning.
Yeah.
You have to do something to separate yourself from that person. And we saw this with Dominic and Wendell. You know, when you've got a very strong duo, what did you do to separate yourself from that other half? And if all of the moves are the same, and if everything that you're playing the game in tandem together the entire time and doing the same things, someone's got to get credit for it. And the fact that everyone is telling you Tyson's going to win, congratulations on second, because he's the one that's pulling the strings. Jervis and Monica needed to do something to separate themselves and show that it wasn't just Tyson. It was both of them, and neither one of them were successful at doing that.
Yeah. Now, Monica did, I will say, Monica did try in the lead up to Final Tribal Council. As the game neared its end, she would, of course, go out and have those long talks with people besides Tyson and Jervis. Now, this is what caused the unending amount of nervousness for those guys, which we were just talking about. Why did they play the other? Well, she spent so much time talking to the others.
Mm-hmm.
But Monica told Rob that she was never going to flip. She was appearing to entertain the others' ideas as a way to lobby for their votes in final tribal council. It didn't end up working, but she was trying.
But I think that that worked against her, because if you have a willingness to make it appear to someone that, oh, maybe I will. No, that's a good idea. I think if we voted out Jervis or if we voted out, if we did something like she was presenting it as if this was a definite option and something that she was strongly considering. And something that was even surprising to Tina and Sierra when she was the one who walked up and said, well, there might be another option. So she's presenting this to them as here's a possibility, and then not ever following through with it. And so I think in someone's mind who's watching this happen, they might think she's got no backbone and she's all talk and she's not willing to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. When you have people talking constantly about big moves, and Monica, you need a big move, and that whole belief that you have to have a resume, Monica was a whole lot of talk and not a lot of action. And so I think it definitely worked against her. Instead of people saying, well, Monica's just being very loyal and she weighed all of her options and thought this is the best one, they looked at it and said, no, Monica, you didn't have the willingness or the ability to pull the trigger because you were too afraid to do so. So it, I think, worked against her in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the other thing was that Monica told Rob that she made a conscious decision to go to the end with Tyson and Jervis, not just because she figured she wouldn't win no matter what and wanted one of them to, although that was in her mind, apparently, but because they were the only way that she had a shot. She told Rob that there was really no differentiation, like if she went with Sierra and Hayden or something like that. You know, all of them had been partnered with Tyson and Jervis at one time or another. So what was the difference there?
Right.
But if she went with Tyson and Jervis, well, she was the only one who didn't have blood on her hands. And so, you know, she was hoping she could stand out in that way.
Yeah. No, and I do think that this is an interesting thing that we've seen in other final three decisions. Who do you go to the final three with? Do you mm-hmm. want to go to the final three with the people that you have worked with and can try to find those nuanced differences? Or do you go to the final tribal three with people who have played wholly different games?
Right.
And then people can really focus on each person individually as opposed to a group and then trying to parse it out from that group.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, another thing that does deserve mention about Monica's decision is that if she went with, say, Tina and Sierra, each of the others would have had their loved one on the jury.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have, first of all, it would have been an automatic vote. But also, those people would have been there to lobby the other jurors.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Sierra would probably have won in that scenario, thanks to both voting out her mom and forcing the rock draw.
That happened?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I think Monica had to have recognized that, you know.
Oh, I'm sure she did. Yeah.
Looking around going like, who can I beat? Well, it's not a good chance, but at least I can differentiate myself against these two guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think she was in a tough spot. And that's why it becomes so important to your Survivor game to be looking at the end at the beginning. You
yes.
want to start thinking early on, who do you want to sit next to? And especially in, you know, this type of season when you've got loved ones who would potentially be sitting on the jury, you need to be thinking about that too. And to know that that's an automatic vote for someone's loved one definitely is something that Tyson was aware of and thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he was focusing on people that didn't have loved ones in the game anymore and keeping them in the game as opposed to people that had loved ones, because he saw how that vote could end up. So I do think that that was another added component that she just didn't think about early enough in the season.
Yeah. Now, you already started talking about this, but once we got to the final tribal council, I think it can be basically broken down as follows. Jervis said he used strategy and blindsides, such as against Aris, and played the game the way it should be played. Monica said the jurors thought she was dragged along, but that wasn't true. She made choices because she wanted to sit with Tyson and Jervis in the final three. And Tyson said he came in knowing he'd be target number one and figured he'd have the maximum amount of fun he could have. But that changed when Rachel was voted out. He had to get to the end to make up for her. Everything he did was strategic, including his hard work to get both idols. And, you know, he reiterated these points several times in response to questions.
And he cried.
And he cried, which, I mean, part of me believes that was firmly strategic. But
mm-hmm.
he also broke
too.
Down somewhat in the reunion, and there was no point in doing it then.
Yeah, but he just won $1 million. So I think there's a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
I
think it's probably both. That he yeah. It was emotional, but he also played up the emotion, kind of like he did with his shoulder. Yeah,
right.
It hurt. Yeah, it was injured, but I'm going to play it up more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Now, there are a couple of questions that I think deserve special mention. One, I mentioned this earlier when Katie brought up Tyson's comment about that's your seat over there on the jury. You know, after she got rocked out.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a nice thing to say, but he did appear to sincerely apologize for it. And she must have accepted it at least enough to vote for him.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of a, I shouldn't say that, Tyson.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the other is what he said in response to Aris's question that he would have voted Monica in final tribal council. Tyson told Rob that was definitely strategic, his answer, because he felt Jervis was the bigger competition at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that was genius. That mm-hmm. To plant that seed, which is what he did the entire season. He spent mm-hmm. the whole season planting seeds to put ideas in people's heads. And that was another example of him doing that. He didn't think Monica was going to get any votes. And then to say that to Aris, it kind of shifted the attention away from Jervis and might have made people start thinking about Monica instead of Jervis. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a genius move for yeah. sure.
Now, I also want to call out Vetus as being particularly annoying because he credited Tyson with getting them before they could get him. But he still wouldn't vote for Tyson. Because yeah. he had promised slash threatened Tyson with withholding his final vote, and Tyson still voted him out. Oh, boo effing who for you, Vetus. Come on, get over yourself. You know, I just don't like it when people threaten that in Survivor that way. Like, oh, if you vote me out, I'm not going to vote for you at the end. And then to do that.
Well, and I think it's interesting because we don't see that very often.
Right.
And when it does happen, it is one of those moments you're like, oh, yeah, that is kind of a bargaining tool you could use.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't normally see that happen. And yeah, Vetus was definitely going to hold true to that.
Yeah. As Rob said when he interviewed Tyson after the season, Tyson does not negotiate with terrorists.
Apparently not.
Yeah. But overall, Tyson pretty well ruled this tribal council in much the same way he ruled the game. And he told Rob it was at that point that he realized he had probably won because he was expecting it to be much worse. But the other players recognized who had controlled everything, and the bitterness that some were expecting for the supposed blood on his hands, like we mentioned before, it just wasn't there. It all washed clean.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So, all right. Well, it is about time to wrap things up. So what are your final thoughts?
I think Tyson really should be credited as being one of the greatest Survivor players. And I know that he has said that in interviews that he doesn't get the credit he deserves. And I agree that he should. But it also took him three times to get there. And that kudos to him for doing that, you know, for learning from his past mistakes, which, again, is something that he talked about in a lot of his interviews that he's conducted, is that not enough people learn from their previous mistakes.
Right.
And he clearly did. He realized things that he had done wrong in his two previous seasons, and he wasn't going to make the same mistake this time. And so I do think that a lot of things worked in his favor that you would think normally wouldn't work in someone's favor. The fact that he came in being seen as such a threat, you would think would work against someone, but instead it almost worked in his favor because of the way that he handled it. He did a great job coordinating people, kind of bringing people into the fold and really managing information the entire time he was out there. And it was almost like this narrative took over about Tyson, where so many people were talking about how Tyson's going to win. Tyson's playing the best game. Tyson is going to he's going to be getting the $1 million check. I hope you like second place. This was the narrative surrounding Tyson, which you would think, again, would have worked against him. But instead, I think it controlled the game even further, where it put that into people's minds. They were all kind of resigned to the fact that Tyson's a great player and Tyson's going to win. And so when Tyson's sitting there in the final three, well, we've heard about this, haven't we? We've heard that he's going to win. We've heard that second place is the first loser. So then Tyson's going to win the game. And so I do think that Tyson had so many nuanced components of his game working in his favor that normally should have never worked. But I think it was because Tyson knew how to manage it. He was constantly working through the scenarios, trying to figure out the best mechanism for him to get to the final three and utilizing those people that he needed to use to get there without making them feel like he was using them. And so he did everything he could to kind of craft the perfect game, if you will, and really, I think, put himself in that final three from the very beginning of the game. Because he saw the path he needed to take, and he built the path himself. And that is why I think Tyson won.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you must have been looking over my shoulder as I was writing my notes here. Because, yeah, we've spoken before about self-fulfilling prophecies on Survivor. If people mm-hmm. keep talking about how somebody's going to win and nobody ever gets them out, that person is going to win.
Right.
People were worried about Tyson before the game. People were worried about him throughout the game. People were worried about him at the end of the game. But nobody ever actually did anything about it other than Sierra's 33% shot at rocking him out.
Mm-hmm.
They barely even tried. Multiple times throughout the podcast, I've talked about somebody came to a realization, but by the time they did, it was too late. That was what Tyson excelled at, keeping people feeling safe until they couldn't do anything about it.
Yep.
He managed to put himself into a position where he had multiple people in different sub-alliances all loyal to him. He had his core, and then the next level, and the level after that, and so on. Some of those in the different levels even made it easy for him by unsuccessfully plotting against him and thus giving him the excuse to vote them out without giving them the ability to cry about it being a double cross, at least in most cases. This is something you brought up earlier, that he didn't have to stab someone in the back because they basically put themselves out there for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This was especially important in a Redemption Island game because we saw so much dirty laundry come out in the pre-merge. Tyson had his solid trio, and with them, he managed to get all the way to the end. Jervis was always going to be the zero vote finalist because he was Tyson light. He did things basically the same as Tyson from a strategic standpoint, but Tyson was better both at figuring out what was going on and also in getting credit for it, in part because Jervis allowed that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go to a final tribal council against someone in a situation like that. But Jervis's problem was he couldn't find a way around it either. Monica similarly found herself in a situation where she couldn't beat Tyson, but she also couldn't turn on him. It really was a perfect situation for Tyson. In the reunion, Tyson said his vow to make it to the end for Rachel kept him focused. He never relaxed. He had to keep fighting for her. And he did. Tyson showed in previous seasons that he was a smart guy and a fun guy, but also a guy who could make mistakes. This season, especially after the second vote, he made sure he was thinking everything through and he wasn't going to make any mistakes. Everyone saw how he controlled the game, did everything strategically, downplayed his huge threat level, made everyone like him, and even found the idols. He had pretty much every aspect of the game locked up. And that is why Tyson won.
I was almost going to eat another piece of chicken, but I didn't.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. You are too enraptured by what I was saying. Yes.
No, I definitely was. Yes. No, it's always great when you do your wrap up. It's always great.
Well, thank you. Let me remind everyone that the rules we just discussed are available as a poster. There it is. Poster.
Oh, okay.
a shirt like this, a sweatshirt, t-shirt.
Shirt like this.
Mug, and just in case it wasn't clear, why blank won on one side, why blank mm-hmm. lost on the other side.
Right.
Ooh, 2-1.
And the poster is on the mug as well.
Oh, okay.
So yes. There's that option too. So if you want to have the poster on a mug, you can do that.
Yes.
Although one more thing.
It's small.
It is small.
But
it's cute though.
Yes. Cute. As we had said before, for the shirts, the mugs, whatever, go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click on the merch link, browse through the designs. You know, you can click through, select mugs, select t-shirt. That makes it easier to get through. For the poster, go to tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter2.
Yes. And listen, if you are outside of the United States and you are interested in ordering a poster, you can certainly DM me and I will get that to you. And I am going to be sending a poster to Andrew, who was the winner of the Zoom call with me. So thank you, Andrew, for always listening and being a huge fan. And he will be getting a poster, and he's actually in Canada. So I can definitely make that happen for you. So if you want to do that, just get in touch with me, and we will definitely make that happen.
I do think it's funny the way you say that, like it's so far away when for you, that's like a few miles, Canada, you know?
I know. Listen, I could stand on my parents' porch and probably throw it over the border. So yeah, just it is a little close. I'm farther away because I'm near Albany. But yeah, when I'm at my parents' house, I'm literally right there.
Yeah. All right. As we wrap up, I want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. We just started a new month, so it's perfect time to join. And if you're already a patron, don't stop listening now. Well, actually, no, that was the, never mind. I mean, don't stop listening now anyway. But yeah, you know, once you join, you'll see that the RHAP patron program has so many different ways to have fun and interact. That's what I meant. There are all these different ways. Hopefully, as a patron, you already know them. But just in case you don't, there's patron family feud, patron mafia, patron. I think they, you know, they were doing patron like Jeopardy for Big Brother and stuff like that. There's a patron only follow up podcast for each Survivor season in the countdown. Monthly patron call in shows, weekly Q&A show with Nicole. And of course, the patron Facebook groups to keep you occupied with a great community of people, including both of us, where you could talk about Survivor, Big Brother, life in general. Survivor South Africa, whatever. So remember again to go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
And you should also follow us on Twitter. I am at JessicaLewis89 and he is at David Bloomberg. You should definitely follow us both. We do live tweet during Survivor episodes that will be up and coming in the fall. So that will be super exciting. And we also tweet about all kinds of things Survivor during this time and other things as well. You should definitely follow us both at JessicaLewis89 and at David Bloomberg.
Yes, and I've been tweeting about Survivor South Africa so far. So
yes, and I have been enjoying your tweets immensely.
Yes. the hashtag for, as we're doing for all of these, is hashtag WhyTyson1. And of course, the hashtag for this podcast overall, WhyXLost. Make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the reality TV wrap-ups feed. In both places, you can find a wide variety of great content, including, of course, the ongoing Survivor season countdown.
That's right. Can I do my thank yous now?
You can.
All right. I would like to thank Scott St. Pierre for all of the editing that he does, both on the video and audio portions of Why Blank Lost podcast. So thank you, Scott, for everything that you do. And also thank you to Will from America for the incredible theme song that you did for us. You wrote so long ago. It's so catchy and definitely wonderful. So you should definitely check that out. If you haven't listened to it, put it on repeat. It's quite fun. So thank you, Will. Wonderful.
Well, thank you, Jessica, for joining me once again to talk Survivor. It had been a few weeks, but based on the remaining seasons, I think we're getting to the point where I expect to be getting together more frequently. So everyone keep your eyes and ears open.
Listen, and I'm living in fear of what my life is going to become very soon.
And then people will hear from me sooner than that, as I'll be making an appearance with Rob shortly. Can't say when, can't say what, but shortly.
I know. I have to not say anything.
Yes. and then after that, we'll be back together to see everyone soon for the next look at Why Somebody Won. So we will talk to everyone soon. Bye.
Bye.
Survivor and you're feeling down. David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Baby, this is why